First thing he said was, yeah.
I know, I knew it was cool.
Wait till I do the quiz that's like 40 minutes into class. Oh, I will be good and I'll just do one of it again. All right, here you go. You will have 60 seconds. You will have 60 seconds. 60 seconds. 1 minute to tell me. Ready for this? I'm going to give you two directions. 60 seconds to tell me ready? Wait for it. In a criminal case, who's suing who and what are the consequences, the outcomes? Criminal case, who's suing who and what are the consequences? And you were down to 45 seconds.
Whoa.
Seconds left. Make sure your name's on it, pass them forward.
You said criminal or civil?
I said criminal. Oh,
shit.
Am I good? Do I got them all?
That'll do it.
Alright, do I have them all? Who in a criminal case is suing who?
The government versus the defendant.
Government versus the defendant? And what are the possible outcomes of a criminal trial?
Jail time.
Jail.
Death.
Death.
Probation.
Fine. Well, probation technically counts as custody. Oh, so if you put probation, you're good. No, that's civil. Oh. All right, very good, very good. So, like I told you on day one, it is my expectation that you come to class, every class prepared. So what would that involve to be ready for today? Well, you would have had to take some notes last class and study them between then and now. So hopefully you all did well. There will be many quizzes. So if you bomb a couple along the way, it's not the end of the earth. Don't freak out.
This one should just be a free one.
I didn't know you like
what in
like
life
60
is free?
Seconds.
All right, there you go, there you go. All right, hold on. There was one person absent. That's the kid there. Where are we at? So over rule four. This kid's not there. Gabriel is. He's absent as of right now. Okay. So today, what we're gonna do is we're gonna learn how to deal with the way that we learn about the law if you ever consider going to law school. Essentially, you learn by reading cases. By reading cases, you have a chance to see how a particular court dealt with the circumstances of some type of conflict
and apply the applicable standards of law to almost get a pre-described outcome. Again, if you remember what I said last class, you know, under our system of common law, stare decisis, courts will use standards made by courts decades, centuries beforehand to ensure that the best that they can, there's an objective standard that's applied. So that way everyone is treated the same under the law. So to a degree, it's almost, in many instances, plug and play. Where cases get really interesting and they become national is if there's something new going on. Because under the common law system, if there's a completely new incident, the courts have a right to jump into the zone. So that's where new standards are made. The other thing that I forgot to say is, hi, who are you?
Alex.
Okay, so. So you're not, wait, where was the little arrow right there? Is Gabriel here? No. Where did that kid go? Where did Alex go? Oh, he's right there. Alex, were you here last class?
No.
Okay, that's fine. All right, see me after class. All right, so one thing I forgot to say last class is when you look at some of the laws that are in the statutes, many of the statutes were passed by the legislature to codify court decisions. So the common law definition of murder has been codified in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So the same standards that a judge thought of centuries ago is now the law of the state. So sometimes you do see that. So what we're going to do, like I said in last class, is we're going to just kind of learn the common law. And so there may be statutes where some of the elements are a little off, but it's not the end of the world. All right, so this is a good starting point. When you look at cases, there is a process that is repeated in every single case. Typically, if you see a case, it's not a case that comes from a trial, but rather it's a case that comes from an appeal. Now, by the way, there's going to be a lot of little factoids that I'm going to plug into your brains. And here's one of them that you'll hear me say over and over and over again. While you do have a right to a trial, you do not have a right to an appeal. You do have an absolute right to a trial. You do not have a right to an appeal. We will see how you get an appeal. But just real quick, there has to be a mistake that was made. So you don't get an appeal if you lose. You will only be granted an appeal if something happened during the trial that justifies a review. So many of the cases that we're going to see that I'm going to throw at you over the course of the semester are appeals. Because what the court is doing is they're trying to determine if the substantive law or the procedural law was applied correctly. And that is the case with the case that we're going to start off with, Coon v. Pubzo. As you can see, although I don't think I included it, but if you ever were to look up this case and find this on caselaw.com or something like that, you will be able to look right in the code and you'll be able to see what court it came from. And in this instance, it came from the Superior Court of New Jersey, which is an appeals court. All right. In every single case, it also tells you who is suing who. So in this particular case, the first person's name typically is the plaintiff. So if the first person is the plaintiff, what's the second name? Defendant, right, because this is a civil case. By the way, if we looked at it, how would we be able to identify if it was a criminal case? It's like Massachusetts versus.
Yeah, exactly.
State would be first. But this is a civil case. So we have a individual suing a business. Wait, hold on. A business? How can you sue a business? Is a business a person?
It's an entity.
Okay, it's an entity. What does that mean?
Like a person, it's its own thing.
The law treats it like a person. So while a person you can go up and poke and you can touch and you can feel and you can see, you really to a degree can't do the same with a business. But under the law, it's organized. It exists on paper. And thus, it has assets and responsibilities. So just like a person, a business can be sued if it fails to adhere to standards under the law. And by the way, what is the advantage of suing a business as opposed to a person? It's all about the vengeance. In law school, they refer to it as deep pockets. If you're going to bring a civil suit against somebody, you want to go after the person who has the deepest pockets. Why? Hmm? Yeah, more money. Woo. All right. You also, as I referred to, you have a citation. So all of these cases are actually recorded and put in law books. And they're contained in annual printings. So you have the ability to actually go into a law library, go to the particular reader where the book is, and read the case firsthand. You're not going to have to worry about that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to make you go find a case. Because most of the cases we cover, you can use the Google machine. As I said before, not only do you get to know where, but they also include the year. So we know this case was decided 22 years ago. Why would knowing the place and the year be kind of important to keep in mind when reading a case?
These laws are uniform across the country.
Say it loud.
Because the law isn't uniform across the country, so different courts apply.
Every single state has their own code of law. So the way the law is applied in New Jersey may be different than the way the law is applied here. And when? Why is that important? The date. Yeah. Maybe this case is no longer a ruling case because maybe the law has changed. So this may have value for historical purposes, even if it's not controlling. Well done. All right. Now this is the part that most students get caught up in. And ironically, it's probably the least important component of a case. The facts. Why do I say that? Well, the only reason why the facts are presented is to kind of give you context for what the court did. So, sometimes I give hypotheticals, and sometimes students try to do everything they can to remember every single word that comes out of my mouth, or if I put it on the screen, every single word that's on there. But no, you do not have to do that. the only facts that are relevant in terms of understanding are those tied to the issue. So to put it another way, you have to understand just enough to understand why the court is deciding this case. So there you go. I think I gave you a long synopsis. I think I pretty much copied it almost word for word, all of the facts that were included. But look at this. You can just read this simple paragraph and you kind of got the gist of what's going on. But why did the appeals court hear the case? Well, this is the error, potentially. The person requesting the appeal claims essentially that the substantive law was not applied properly. So the appeals court is not going to look to see if defendant was liable. The only thing the appeals court is going to look at is the law applied correctly? The issue. Well, once the court determines the issue, it then takes the important facts and applies it to the pre-existing standards of the law. And when they do that, you get an outcome. If the outcome is the same as the trial court, essentially the appeals court is saying the trial court got it right. Which means, and again, you don't have to write this down now, we'll get to it, which essentially means that the appeals court will affirm the decision below. If, however, the trial court got it wrong, the appeals court may put a new outcome in where the decision is reversed. So maybe plaintiff lost during the trial, but the trial court screwed up so bad that the appeals court says, no, plaintiff should have won. So essentially they reversed the decision. The reason we have this is because those dead old white guys that made our country, after studying centuries of history determined by a bunch of other dead old white guys, is that they understood that human beings make mistakes. While no system is perfect, the goal of the law should be always to get the best decision possible under the rules of society, under the law. So, if plaintiff lost in trial, but justice demands he should have won, the appeals court will say, sorry, trial court, you got it wrong. Here's the new outcome. Yes?
How many times can you appeal?
Oh, how many times can you appeal? In most states and at the federal courts, you got three shots at it. You got the trial, shot one. You go to a mid-level appellate court, there's two. Then if you appeal the decision of appeals court, which you can do, you go to typically the state's top court. Or if you're in the federal courts, up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, by the way, New York State actually has two level of appeals courts before the Supreme. So in New York, you actually get four.
So each state is different?
Every state is different. But the vast majority of them are true. Other questions? Am I speaking Swahili? Or am I making sense?
Yes.
You know, the funny thing is that if you are an educator and you cannot educate your students, what's the point? So I get it that not everyone is understanding everything that I'm saying. I get it that maybe this is completely foreign to you. But my goal is always to make sure that the majority, most students, at least we're on the same page. And again, I do get a little zany. I am always hyper-caffeinated, but truth be told, I'm a nerd and I love this stuff. So that's all it is. I get excited every single class. But I want to make sure that you understand. So if you are lost, raise your hand. Or if you are a shy, send me an email.
All right.
So, if you're a student, how do you make sense of a case that could be 10, 15, 20, 40 pages long? Well, at some point, some clever person decided, why do we need to waste our time with everything? Why don't we do the Cliff Notes versions? And collectively, that's referred to as case briefing. So my expectation is if I give you some cases to read, I don't expect to see verbatim what's on there. Because the purposes of a case brief is not for the teacher. The purpose of a case brief is to be for you, to help you understand what's going on. So what does this mean? Well, there's going to be some homeworks where I'm going to collect briefs. And there are going to be some students whose briefs are going to be maybe 5 lines long. If that is enough to allow them to answer whatever questions I may have for them on the case, then that's good enough. But if you need a little more substance, you could make it a page. But if you find yourselves making a brief that's almost as long as the case, you're probably writing too much.
All right. When I was in law school, I did it a little differently than was recommended to me by my professors. Because I understood the natural tendency to get caught up in the facts. Because the facts are what makes cases interesting. You know, Jim was walking down the street in the shadows of the night. And then he jumped out and he punched Stephen in the face, completely hitting him in the back of the skull. Not even, you know, those are the details that are juicy. But all those details are good for convincing a jury. But in terms of an appeals court making its decision, it's not worth wasting time on. So how do you narrow your scope? Well, I always start off by writing the issue first. Because that's one of the easiest things to find in a case. Because the court will tell you what the issue is. What was the mistake? The error from the trial that they're looking at. Because once you get the issue, you know, well, I gotta get enough facts so I can understand the issue. Another helpful thing to put at the top of the paper, look down in the court's decision. What was the rule of law that they applied to solve the issue? Courts put those in every single case. Because if the court is not applying standards of law, they are not doing what they are designed to do. Because remember, we are a nation of laws, not of men. Most rules that are applied are based on common law principles. Again, there are some statutes that get applied in cases that are our modern constructs, that were legislatively designed, not court designed. And that's fine.
But it's the same basic gist. Most of the things you're going to see come from common law. Say like terrorism. Terrorism are statutes that have been designed by the federal government to deal with times as they've evolved over the last 30, 40 years. The act of terrorism, doing something violent to scare people, that was really not contemplated back in the Middle Ages. So, under the common law, an act of terrorism would be like homicide, assault, and battery. You know, they would look at the act rather than the, you know, shit effect. Because back in the day, they didn't have television or the internet, which people consume mass quantities of media, and it works on their psyche and it instills fear because we oversaturate ourselves and forget to look at the forest for the trees. Then, three facts. Only the important ones that are tied to the issue of the rule. I don't care that Annie drove a blue car. That's not important to me. Unless she was in a vehicular accident. Then what would be important is to know that she had a car. Because obviously you can't get in a vehicular accident if you're not driving a car. Ooh, but what happens if it was a motorcycle? Well, maybe knowing she was on a motorcycle might be important. But is the make and model important? No. Make sense? Again, you're going to find a groove that works for you. And how you do it is fine, just so long as you understand what's going on in the case. Oh, this is where it gets really annoying. The exceptions. Because as the old saying goes, for every rule there's an exception. Sometimes courts will make a decision that based on the circumstances, the normal rule should not apply. Because whatever happened was outside the bounds. So they create an exception. And we're going to see that when we deal with basic duties. Duties of one person to another. And then ultimately the holding. Court found the mistake, applied the facts to the rule, and made a decision. Are we affirming it? Are we reversing it? Are we remanding it? You know, what action did the court take and why?
And I think that might be it. I'm not sure because I don't have this in my notes.
So I don't want to click yet because it goes black. Any questions on it?
All right, let's play.
Bless you. You're welcome.
All right, so you're Michael. What did you say your name was? Latecomer? You.
Alex.
Alex what?
Over there.
Fair. So, FYI, I am going to move you, but not for this class. Because that's where David sits. Right, you were there? Last class?
Oh,
yeah.
I was up there.
You were in the front up here?
Oh,
wait, Michael.
Yeah, Michael.
No, Michael. No, you were there. You were next to Joe.
Well, that was the first class.
No, when you signed it, you're next to Joe. Yeah, yeah. So next class, I want you there, and you, we'll put you somewhere else. You might end up in the back over there, but we'll deal with that later. All right, so we good. Can you see the squares on the back?
Yes.
Can you see people's names?
Yes.
Can you read the people's names?
No.
Point to a square. Jose Wattler? All right. Now here we go. Did you read Coon v. Pub Zone? All right. When you go before the court, what must you do? Please rise. We want to make sure everyone in the room can hear your thoughts.
Sorry.
All right. Here we go. You ready for this?
Sure.
Coon v. Pub Zone. Coon v. Pub Zone. Briefly, what happened?
What's his name? They got a patron walked into the bar, a motorcycle gang.
Coon?
Yeah, Coon.
Yeah.
Coon walked into the bar, the Pagan gang walked in as well.
What was the bar called?
Pub Zone.
Okay.
They weren't supposed to be allowed in.
Why not?
Because they're a gang that's dangerous.
What do gangbangers do?
Beat people up.
They beat people up, exactly.
That's our problem.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
They weren't allowed to be in.
No.
They still got in.
How?
The doorman let him in.
Why?
Because he's stupid.
Oh.
Didn't do his job.
Okay. No. Didn't do his job.
Yeah.
Well, hold on a second.
He didn't fulfill his duty.
Whoa! Look at that curveball. All right. Okay. What else you got?
They let them in even though they weren't supposed to. Nobody was watching them. There was insufficient security in there to prevent anything from happening. So the motorcycle gang followed him into the bathroom, beat him up, and that's pretty much it.
Okay. Does anyone disagree? You disagree?
I don't disagree, but I just want to add something.
She could be schooled. So now, guess what, Jose?
Yeah.
Because you participated, you get a yellow dot.
Awesome. That's it.
Yes, sir.
All right,
Amber, you think you're clever? All right. Stand before the court. What are you going to add?
They weren't supposed to be in the bar because there was a sign posted because the owner had known the Pagans to be, just randomly attack people for no reason. So there was a sign posted stating that certain colors, couldn't be let in. And they kind of pushed themselves past the doorman. And the owner talked to them and the patron and still let them stay for one
drink. Forced cells in. Okay. Anything else that you want to add that I think we should put on the board?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. Good. Those are not too bad. Now, by the way, both. In my mind, if I was to read a brief, would be right. Obviously, I would like a little more facts, but as long as it's the gist, we're good. Nico. Did you read the case? All right, a little bit. I got a question for you. And this is more kind of like something to think about rather than what happened in the case. All right. If the bar had a policy, if the bar had a sign, why do you think they did that? No. Why does the bar have a policy that says no bikers? Why does the bar have signs posted? No bikers. Oh. From past experience comes what?
Bad
starts with a silent K. Knowledge. Okay. Knowledge. So it's chances are they've had problems in the past. Now, here's the thing. We need to determine, is it common or is it rare? Dudes. Are dudes by their nature inherently violent? Most. In any circumstance or situation? No. Generally, no. So this means we cannot necessarily have a policy banning all dudes. What about dudes who hang out in little cliques? If you hang out in like a little clique, does that increase your propensity for violence?
No.
No? Have you ever belonged to a club? Played on a sports team?
Yeah.
Did all you guys go and kick the shit out of people just because you were all on the same team?
Not usually.
No, not usually. Okay. So the fact that they were in an association doesn't necessarily mean they are going to cause shenanigans, so to speak. You know what shenanigans are? Okay, very good. But what about dudes who identify themselves with certain symbols or representations that may be stereotypically involved in acts of violence, particularly when alcohol comes in? Do you think you could stereotype those dudes? Big burly guys wearing leather vests with all kind of like skulls and swastikas and knives. You know, they might be troublesome.
I guess if they're wearing like specific insignia that makes them look like they're of a specific gang that is known for violence. I guess that makes sense.
Ooh, that's a good point. Question for you. Why do groups wear specific insignias?
So other people can identify them.
Oh. Good, thank you. All right. So we have a bar. Its purpose is to sell alcohol. It has a policy that basically says we don't necessarily want the bike. Now, here's a question for you. And I'm not going to call on someone and ask them, and I'll open it up just to general, because this is just kind of a broad question that everyone might not remember. Was the fact that they were in a biker gang, was that the heart behind the policy? Or could they still come in, even though they were in a gang, so long as it wasn't necessarily advertised?
I think they were allowed even, I think it was specifically the colors, like if you were wearing the gang associated colors that you couldn't go with, but if you were regular and still
so
part of that gang.
You if you wanted to wear a black t-shirt with Black Sabbath on it or something like that, you're wearing your jeans and your biker boots, you could still go in, but you could not go in wearing the symbols. Why? Cause fear. Well, if you know this particular gang has a reputation, what about the other patrons? Why also?
Protection.
Fight people for no reason. Who would they be likely to fight?
Other gang
members. Other gang members. Oh, so what happens if the pagans are in there and like the Grim Reapers suddenly show up at the bar? One group is wearing their colors, the other group comes in wearing their colors. What could, in all likelihood, reasonably, occur within that bar?
Gang war.
You could have a gang war. You could have people being harmed. Now, by the way, is the law necessarily concerned if biker A stabs, punches, kicks, shoots biker B when they engage in fisticuffs? Who is the law mostly worried about? Other people. Other patrons, the bar staff, people just randomly outside. Because, by the way, if you shoot a gun inside a building, the bullet will continue to travel until it hits something that it, you know, reduces enough of its speed so it hits the ground. But I'll tell you one thing. You couldn't shoot through this building unless it went through the window. But if you're just in a regular building that has, you know, drywall and, you know, wood 2x4s inside the walls, the bullet's probably going to go right through the building to the other side. So you could be outside on the other side of the building. Has nothing to do with the bikers. And suddenly you feel that sheer and burning sensation of penetration. All right. Anything else that we think is important that we need to know? All right. Carlton. How are you? All right. Question for you. What happened during the trial? Because obviously, the guy who got the shit beat out of him
is the pub
sub the bar. What? Gonna say it loud. Pub zone. Yeah, we're still the pub zone. You didn't read Coon v. Pub Zone?
Oh, dude.
Man. How many times did I say to read it? I'm gonna have to change that yellow. Thank you for your honesty. I appreciate that. Because, by the way, if you don't do the homework, you think you're going to be able to bullshit your way through it? All right.
Let's try again.
Ethan. Did you do it? Nice. All right, sir. Do you remember what happened during the trial? So Coon sues Pub Zone.
Yeah, he lost,
actually. He lost. He did lose. Do you remember why?
Dude.
What? You don't have to be precise, but roughly, just generally speaking, do you kind of remember at all the reason why they lost?
Yeah, they couldn't connect it that well.
They couldn't connect it well. Do you remember what was the connection that was missing? Okay, well, you answered the most important question, so you're good. Read. Did you read it?
Yeah, I did.
All right. Do you remember? You agree, right? That he didn't he didn't win during trial. Do you remember why?
There was no security inside the bar, and I don't think the bouncer outside had any formal training.
Okay, so there wasn't enough security, but that doesn't that explains why he got the shit beat out of him. But that doesn't necessarily explain why the bar won. Any recollection?
No. It's been a minute since I read it.
All right, no worries. All right, we'll cut you some slack. We'll just open it up, because I know this is really, really a boiled down question.
It's kind of, they didn't prove that the pressure under the bar has to protect the patrons and from the third party. They don't.
Whoa. Now we're really getting technical. We have protection and we have a third party. I know what that word means. What does this mean?
An outsider.
An outsider. Who's the outsider?
The gang.
The gang is the outsider. All right, come back to here real quick. What you're saying is that the court decided that the bar as defendant, didn't have to protect Kuhn. You said Kuhn, we said Kuhn was in the bar, right?
Yeah.
So if you go into a business, you are a?
Your customer.
Your customer, a patron, okay. So what you're saying is that the court believed that the bar did not have a duty to protect their customer from a third party.
Yes, sir.
Why not? If you can't remember what the court said, why, just use your own thought process. Why would a business not have to protect a customer?
He walked in knowing what he was walking into.
Oh, so he gave his consent to get the shit beat out of him? I don't know if I've ever read that in any case. Wow, damn, you are, stay away from that guy. He's nothing but trouble. Yes.
Business is not liable to protect the patron.
From another patron. Okay, we're getting closer. We're starting to use the language that the court used. But why?
They found the injury to the plaintiff was not foreseeable.
Oh, there is a good word right there. Foreseeability. Foreseeability. What does that mean?
Like, you know something's gonna happen.
See it coming. Predictive, right? So, let's think of something that would be foreseeable. Alright? Look how crowded and jammed we are in this room. If I grab my bag, which has cords, pens, and my laptop in it, and I just throw it, what is more likely than not going to occur? Someone's gonna get hit. And reasonably, if you get hit in the head with a flying bag containing a laptop, what probably will happen to you? Could get hurt. All right. That is foreseeable.
Is it foreseeable that you're going to throw the laptop bag? Like, you know what I mean?
Well, maybe not. Yeah, no. Alright, but what about this? What about this? Well, you never know. You never know. Maybe I had a shitty morning, you know? I went to the dentist. I got 7 cavities. What about this? Would the college have a duty to protect you from a meteor strike?
No.
Why not? What are the odds of you being on campus getting struck by a meteor? You probably had a better chance of winning that $1.8 billion and the Powerball than getting struck at Quinn Sigman Community College while you're on campus by a meteor. Yeah, so foreseeability is kind of like something that could potentially happen realistically. Well, here's the thing. If you are a business and there is a circumstance that is reasonably foreseeable, will you be held liable if that customer is harmed on your property? What's the most common instance of a customer being harmed in a business?
Slipping.
Slip and fall. Right. But is it reasonably foreseeable that a biker gang is gonna randomly show up on a night, find you, and beat the living piss out of you?
There's an empty desk over there. Can I sit over there for the day?
Sure. As I said, reasonable foreseeability. Is it reasonably foreseeable that, yes?
would say yes, it is, based on the fact that it's a bar.
Whoa now! Did everyone hear that?
No, I didn't hear
that. Say it again, because everyone's distracted. Say it again.
I would say yes, it is reasonably foreseeable, based on the fact that it's a bar where people are drinking and bikers are known to show up to.
So what you're saying is maybe generally, like if you were like a mom and pop variety store, or if you sold coffee, a little coffee shop, chances are it's not reasonably foreseeable that a biker gang is going to come up and beat the shit out of one of your patrons. But if there's a bar, you said it could increase the probability, yeah? Mm-hmm. Why?
Because
there's alcohol.
Bar fights and movies is a stereotype for a reason.
You like that? Bar fights and movies are a stereotype for a reason. I've been in my lifetime, several bars where there were vast quantities of alcohol consumed on site, and yes, it did result in fisticuffs. It does happen. What about this instance, though? How are you going to prove it? Because at the end of the day, you can make any claim in the world you want, but how are you going to prove that in this particular circumstance, it was reasonably foreseeable that a biker gang would go into the pub zone and beat up one of the patrons? You, sir, in the green.
He had been helped by the sidewalk before.
Well?
The owner was aware of the situation because he had the sidewalk and no college people. He had the knowledge of the 35 and 50 biker.
All Kuhn needed to do was show that the bar owner knew, not that it would happen, but that it could. And how do you show it? Well, obviously, they knew about something. They had a policy in place. They had posters. The staff had instructions. Okay. So if something is reasonably foreseeable, what creates the obligation for the establishment to do something about it under the law? What does the law create? A duty. A duty. A duty is a legal standard of responsibility. If the law says you have a duty, that means you must take reasonable steps to prevent what may likely occur. Questions. So here is your first rule that you should write in your notes and you should start studying. As a general rule, the owners of a business have no duty to protect patrons from criminal activity by a third party. As a general rule, owners of a business have no duty, none,
whatsoever to protect patrons, that's an R, that's an O, patrons, from criminal activity by a third party. So any type of violent act. So you go into Dunkin' Donuts, and Dunkin' Donuts does not have a duty to prevent, oh, this is bad timing for this, but I'm going to do it anyways, to prevent the person standing in line behind you from stabbing you in the back like that poor woman down in Charlotte. Bad timing. I know. But I didn't want to say club like a baby seal because that makes me sound like I'm heartless. Because who doesn't like looking at pictures of little baby seals? They're so soft and fuzzy. But here's the thing. In Coon v. Pub Zone, the court looked at this. But the appeals court realized, no, there's an exception to this general rule. So this is the rule, but of course, this is the exception. Unless the harm is foreseeable.
Unless the harm is foreseeable.
If the bar owner knew that something could happen from a third party, they have a duty to impose reasonable steps to prevent it from happening. Did the owner of the Pub Zone know something could happen? Did the owner of the Pub Zone take reasonable steps to prevent that type of harm from occurring? Ooh, we have a split decision. Why yes?
Well, yes, because they posted the sign, but no, because they still let them in.
Okay, but they established the steps, yes? Because, by the way, if you establish the steps, can you stop anything? So let me change the facts a little bit. Let's say that the bouncer didn't let the pagans in wearing their cuts. So they went outside, put their cuts on the bikes, came back in, and then beat the crap out of Coon. Would you get the same results?
Can't ask the bar owner to like put bars on the windows and make everything bulletproof. They took reasonable steps.
Yeah. If they weren't wearing their cuts, if they were not allowed in direct violation of the policy, the bar would not have been held responsible. Because how do we know if they don't come in with their colors, who's a biker and who's not? But they were found liable because they breached their own policy. And it's the breach which caused the failure of them to fulfill their duty. Breach. If you have a responsibility and you do not fulfill it, that is a breach of that duty. Questions?
Yes. I don't know, like, how far does that go? Like, if a fight happened in, like, Walmart, and someone used, like, a bat from Walmart to hit someone, can Walmart be liable?
How likely is there to be a fight in Walmart? No. No, look, let's be realistic about this. It really depends. If you go to a Walmart in an inner city, as opposed to one that's out in the middle of, you know, some rural backwater country town, is it likely that fights could break out in both? Yeah, absolutely. Every go shopping on Black Friday, people lose their fucking minds. But is there a track record of it? Well, maybe. But if a particular store has a track record of there being fights, then suddenly the possibility starts going up. And then you have to start digging a little deeper. Did the store know that they were commonly having fights? Did the store take some precautions to mitigate the fights? And the big winner would be, was there ever a situation where in the particular store where the violence occurred, was there a fight that started in the sporting goods stores that resulted in people taking equipment off the rack and going to war against one another like on a medieval battlefield? Jousting with hockey sticks and stuff. Well, if that has occurred, or close to it, then yes, they could be held responsible. But if it had never happened ever before, anywhere, then probably not. So the person who swung the bat could be sued. But the store, again, unless it's in breach of foreseeable knowledge, probably not. So here's the interesting thing about the law. There never is really an absolute answer, because the answer always depends on the circumstance. So again, if the bar owner did not know, if the bar owner didn't call the cops and get advice on how to stop, you know, bar fights from breaking out, if the bar owner had not done that, then there would not have been foreseeability, which means poor Coon loses. But because she took the steps, she failed. And by the way, it was the bar owner. Because if you really go back and read the facts carefully, there's actually mentioned the fact that the guys who kind of forced their way by the bouncer actually went up to the bar and she served them. So she knew they were there wearing the colors.
So in those circumstances, one has a tendency to lose. Questions?
Well done overall.
Nicely done. By the way, it's never going to get more complicated than that. All right. So now I got to do a little lecturing and then we'll call it a class. So let's go back to this.
As I said, the primary purpose of our legal system is dispute resolution. Person or party A has beef with person or party B. And ultimately, the system is designed to make sure, at the end of the day, justice is maintained. Justice. What does that mean? Justice.
Someone pays for the consequences, someone pays for what they did.
Justice could mean someone pays, suffers consequences for their actions. That could be justice. Another example of justice.
People's rights are upheld.
His rights are upheld. Another example of justice. You lose in your claim. Let's say you decide to sue. And you make shit up. Do you deserve to win just because you claim that your feelings were hurt? You were sad? You had to go get tissues because you were crying? No, the law exists to provide remedies for real and actual harm. But if you were not actually harmed by another person, and you tried bringing a case, you deserve to lose. What happens if you make a claim and you have no evidence to back it up? You lose. What happens if you file a case well beyond the statute of limitations, within the timeline that the law allows you to file a claim? You lose. That's justice. Justice ultimately means that you get the outcome that you are allowed under law. If you did something wrong, that means you should be punished. All right. So the law ultimately aims to establish a resolution, an outcome. An outcome that is satisfactory. But here's the reality of things. One, and this is reality, a law cannot cure all disputes. A law cannot cure all disputes. You know what I hate more than anything? I hate the way it looks. I hate the way it smells. I hate the consistency. I hate the taste. I hate the very thought of it. I even hate its name. The one thing on this earth that I actually have hate for, and I don't hate hardly anything, what I actually have hate for, is bananas. I keep praying that there is some type of environmental genocide that wipes all bananas off the face of this earth. I hate them. Can I sue Chiquita Banana? Because I hate bananas? But I hate them! It gives me nightmares! I have to get counseling because of bananas! Will the law provide me a remedy? Not at all. Not at all. Back when I was a kid, there was an old expression that we learned as youngins. Sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. The fact that I don't like bananas doesn't mean I have a right to sue Chiquita Banana into oblivion. No, because there's no remedy for my problem. But there is a solution, and I've imposed it like a dictator in my house. No bananas of any kind come through my doorway.
But was that court imposed? No, that's Lamanic imposed.
Two,
in order for there to be some type of resolution, the dispute must have a cause of action. And I have that in parentheses, cause of action. Defendant must have done something. The only way to have a dispute solved under the law, you got to be aware that the law can't fix all your problems, and two, someone must have actually done something to you
that is actually harmful. And last but not least, the burden is on you bringing the claim to prove your case. The court will not give you a remedy, will not cure your harm, unless you can prove that something went wrong. Here we go. Here's my little hypothetical. Just listen. First fact that's important. There are no witnesses. Bob, during a snowstorm, decides he needs money. So what he decides to do is he goes door to door. And he knocks on people's door and says, "Hey, I'll shovel your driveway for you if you pay me $10. Anthony says, "Sure, I will pay you $10 if you shovel my driveway. Bob shovels the driveway, does an excellent job. He then goes up to the door, knocks on the door. Anthony comes to the door, and he says, "Who are you? Why are you trespassing on my property? Go away." Can Bob sue? Can Bob sue?
Yeah, a verbal contract.
Ooh, this is similar to the situation with the guy in the boat, right? We got a verbal contract. How are you going to prove it?
It's reasonable to believe that Anthony said yes, I'll pay you $10 to shovel my driveway.
Why is that reasonable? Do random people just say, "I'll give you $10"?
Yeah, all the time.
Well, prove it.
Find any other kid or whatever who's going door to door. You see it all the time.
So just kids happen to be being hoodlums down on the street? That means they're by default entitled to $10?
It's not even hoodlums. Shovel someone's driveway.
Oh, that's the point you didn't mention.
Oh.
How can Bob prove the existence of an oral contract?
Because
he shoveled the driveway. Can he whip out his phone and take pictures?
Yeah.
And show that the driveway is shoveled?
Yeah.
Why else would he shovel the driveway but for the existence of...
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
But the thing is, how are you going to prove that you did that? What if you just go to somebody's driveway that was already shoveled and take a picture?
Ooh, that becomes a little more complicated. That becomes a little more complicated. So you go on the neighbor and say, "Hey, I see that you've got a ring cam on your doorway. Did it happen to record me as I was shoveling?" "Sure, kid, it did." There you go. So how you prove it is less important as if you can show something. Something. That's reasonable. All right, very good. Very good. All right, so what I want you to do, I believe we are out of time. Just about, but not enough for me to start something new. Oh, shit, I forgot to tell you this. So some of you were saying that there was an issue with the book.
Yeah.
I figured out why. The book that I gave the ISBN to the bookstore, that was the past edition. There's a new edition of the book available. So I think I put like the 5th edition, now there's the 6th edition. Someone actually showed me it. A blue copy of the book.
Yes, that's what I got.
Yeah, so the blue one is the new edition.
We get the
Does
gold
it matter?
One? If you got the gold one, fine. If you can't get the gold one, the blue one is available. And if you can't get the blue one, I think the edition before the gold one, I think was green. You can find that, get that as well. The law hasn't changed. So whichever edition you can get it if you haven't done so. So that's your homework. If you've already gotten the book, read the first chapter. Great class today, guys. Great class. Thank you.